Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the subcommittee of the Ways and Means Full Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. This afternoon, we've got a couple of items that we need to go through, and Susie Jordan is here from Legislative Fiscal Office, and our subcommittee assistant today is Suzuki Redpath. So let's go ahead and we're on. This is a work session on House Bill 3882.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard House Bill 382 about a week ago. This is the bill that does two things. One, it creates an account for the Department of Transportation, an operating account for them to deposit the fee revenue for business regulation into, so that they can separate that those costs from the highway trust fund. In addition, that this bill creates a refund for those non-road use small motor powered implements like lawnmowers and leaf blowers and that sort of thing to capture the gas tax that is being paid by individuals and refund it to those people. If people don't ask for a refund, then the excess amount of money is then deposited into this new operating fund account. The department estimates that approximately $50,000 would be refunded out of anywhere from $384,000 on the low end to over to almost $1.9 million on the high end, depending upon how, once they do their survey, how much gas people say they use in those kinds of small powered implements.
Yes, Representative Johnson is recognized.
At the time, I guess I have several questions. The first one I want to ask Ms. Jordan is, what happens if this bill doesn't go? This is the collection mechanism, and this creates the pools of money. What happens if this bill doesn't go?
If this bill doesn't go, the department doesn't have, they would probably create a fund administratively or an account to separate the money from the $50,000 worth of services that are being provided that cannot be paid for out of the highway fund. They would have to come back to the emergency board and then ask for general fund support for those services or not do them.
What I'm really trying to get at, and maybe this is a question more appropriately addressed to Mike, is I was troubled the first time that we heard this bill. And what I worry about is I understand the bind you're in. The AG has given you some pretty specific instruction, and that's the instruction. But the give and take that we had at the first hearing when we talked about this leads me to wonder in the long term how many people are going to be in with a Texaco. And I said this with a certain amount of hyperbole the last time, but I thought about it a lot more. How many guys are going to be in with a Texaco receipt looking for a 7-cent refund? And just how administratively nightmarish is this going to be? And I'm looking for us to reassure each other, I guess, that this isn't laying up just a harbor of administrative hassle for ODOT.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, Mike Marsh from ODOT. We have similar concerns about moving ahead with this, but the fact is that currently citizens can already get the refund. So all we're doing through this is establishing a procedure in the statute and making it more clear in our own internal accounting. And we don't really think that the fact that we're doing these things procedurally internally will result in a different reaction on the part of the marketplace.
A question to Ms. Jordan. Do we leave a trap door open for Mr. Marsh and the agency to come back and report to the legislature about this account? I'm just concerned looking down the road that there may be the need for the agency to get some relief or to revisit this in some significant way if this turns out to be administratively burdensome.
The department can come back any time and report on if they're having difficulty with this. We could instruct them to come back and report on how this is panned out in reality, if that's the desire of the subcommittee.
I don't so much want to ask them to have to go to the time and effort to create a report, to report back everything's fine, so much as I want to leave open an escape hatch to come back and say, let's reason together, agency and legislature, and find out a way to deal with the fallout of this.
Chair, Representative Johnson, we appreciate the opening. I think our concern is probably more on the side of if our estimates, which are not based on a lot of data at this point, come out significantly different and the revenue that comes from this fund is a lot different than we projected, then we may need to come back and discuss another course, whether it's hopefully not general fund, but at least looking at other alternatives.
That's exactly where I was at. Thank you.
Let me ask a question, Legislative Fiscal. I know that under certain circumstances that these credits can be taken against income taxes paid or income taxes due on an income tax return. Have we looked at that as an alternative here for this, that a special form be filed with the income tax return claiming the credit for those folks who use the gasoline in their non-highway motors and engines?
Chair Butler,
That would make it certainly less burdensome, and typically those folks, I'm trying to think of that elderly person who does not file a tax return, how many chainsaws they may have laying around the house, or how many gas-powered engines they're running if they're not filing a tax return, and I don't want to make it so burdensome that they would have to do that, but I'm looking at that and saying, is this something that could be assigned basically as an additional form through the Department of Revenue and have it come through on a tax return and basically not have the department involved in any way, shape, or form in the administration of it?
Mr. Chair, we'll certainly be looking at that.
I don't want to preclude that person from coming in and saying, I have a small generator that's a backup, and I put a gallon worth of fuel in just in case, and I don't file a tax return. I'm sitting here in my home, and I'm trying to think. Yeah, there probably are people that own their own homes that have just a pension or retirement income and don't otherwise file, and they would certainly be entitled to the 7 cents, but you're going to have to put a limitation on it. No one gets a refund of less than $1 at some point, I would guess, because the tax itself is 24 cents, and that would be 4 gallons in effect. But and on a tax return, you can do that. They could file a tax return specifically to claim the credit, a refundable credit, and that way it's already within the system. The person is then identified. And we're using, in effect, and I hate to say it like this because it sounds like Big Brother, you're using, in effect, their individual Social Security number to authenticate that you don't have eight claims on the same person.
Like I said, we'll sure be looking into that. I guess part of the concern would be those extremely small pieces would more likely be added on to the income tax return, whereas if they were handled by themselves as a separate piece, might not be coming in at all. So we'll look at it. And whatever works out easiest for the citizen is, of course, a concern here. We also want to make sure that we're doing what we can to ensure there is a fund left after all this.
I don't want to get a legal opinion necessarily tied up into this, Mike, but is there a time limitation within which the amount must be refunded? It certainly doesn't mandate that it must be refunded more often than annually.
Correct, no.
Okay, so then at the income tax return, even if they owed no other tax, and even if they had no other reason to file but to get the refund on the 4 gallons, they could do that. Representative Johnson.
I also want to be mindful of the fact that the funds that are collected fund the donor organ program. I shouldn't say the words. Which is a terribly important program. I am going to come to you shortly. I was reading a magazine called Governing that gave an award to the state of Michigan for a very innovative program that uses driver's license renewal mailings to let people know about organ donation. So I don't want to cut into a program that saves lives by trying to make sure everybody gets their 2 cents refund.
True. And Mr. Chair, just to give context, our forecast is admittedly a very general one, but we only assumed 1 gallon of use by the average homeowner.
I don't know how many chainsaws a chair has.
Make sure you put his name on the list for the survey.
We would skew the survey, certainly, my house. My wife carries one in her purse, along with her platinum card and plutonium card and uranium card. Yeah.
You missed an earlier conversation. You're delightful about credit cards.
I'm going to assume it was one of those ones you had to be here for.
Yeah, you had to be here.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
In the interest of expediting this hearing, I was going to inquire whether the chair was seeking a motion.
I am seeking a motion.
Can I explain the motion first?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we need a motion, one, to amend the bill to require that the Oregon Department of Administrative Services estimate, after consultation with the department and the Oregon Transportation Commission, the amount of the motor vehicle fuel purchased and used in operating non-road implements during the preceding fiscal year, after reducing the amount by any refunds actually paid on motor vehicle purchased and used in operating non-road implements. The Department of Administrative Services will certify the amount of the estimate to the Department of Transportation and to the State Treasurer. Thereupon, the amount of the estimate shall be transferred from the Department of Transportation Driver Motor Vehicle Suspense Account to the Department of Transportation Operating Fund.
Representative Johnson moves the LFO recommendation number one. Is there any discussion? Any objections, Senator?
I think last time they talked about doing a survey. So are they still going to do a survey?
After consultation with the Transportation Commission.
Oh, yes. So after the survey.
Right. Mm-hmm. Any objection as to the first recommendation? So ordered. And Representative Johnson, let's see, legislative fiscal.
The second recommendation is to disappropriate $117,654 general fund appropriation from Senate Bill 5545 for Motor Carrier Transportation Alcohol and Drug Testing Program and increase the other fund's expenditure limitation for motor carrier by $117,654 and increase essential services expenditure limitation by $15,000 to cover the cost of the survey to estimate taxes paid, and then costs associated with processing refunds are already included in the central services budget, but the survey is not. These costs would be paid out of the transportation operating fund.
Representative Johnson now moves recommendation from Legislative Fiscal Office number two. Is there any discussion?
Representative Chair.
Yes, Representative Senator Yee.
How do you determine this $117,654 amount? Is this the amount that is from paragraph one?
The determination of the $117,654.
General fund. How do you determine that amount?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, this is the amount of match required for the federal fund portion of the Motor Carrier Transportation Alcohol and Drug Testing Program. That's a 10% match of a program that they're already doing, and the co-chairs want. Which is reflected in the last paragraph, that whenever possible, the department's reliance on general funds be reduced and money out of this fund be used for that purpose. And at this time, this general fund amount can be identified for use out of it, about based on the estimates that the department is projecting for on the low end. If it comes in higher, whereas we would expect the department to reduce general fund in other areas as well.
Other question?
So if you reduce this amount from the Motor Carrier Transportation Alcohol and Drug Testing Program, then you don't have to match for the federal fund for that program.
Mr. Chair, not out of the general fund. We still have to match it, but it's coming then out of other funds.
Oh, from the fees we charge.
From the gas
tax. From this gas tax that's being recaptured.
But, I mean, when you follow up, Mr.
Chair,
when you take this amount from the commercial driver's alcohol and drug testing program, that program would not have the general fund to match
That we're giving it back by increasing their other fund expenditure limitation.
Oh, I see. And the other funds is the amount the truckers fee, truckers pay for the testing.
No. Chair Butler, Clarity Needs, the other fund is the lawnmower money. The fund that you're creating by doing the survey of how much gasoline tax you're paying on a gallon on the gas that you're using in your lawnmower and your leaf blower and that sort of thing. When they estimate that the amount of money that is being recaptured from that, that's not highway dedicated money. That's money now that's going into this operating account to operate these other programs. And this is one of the programs the legislature is now directing ODOT to use that money for as well.
Oh, so the money you collect here, you put it in the commercial driver's testing program?
Yes.
And
A portion of it. Right.
And then what do you do with the general fund? You put it back to our general fund?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Backdoor approach, isn't it?
Yes. I see. Well, thank you for the explanation.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question to Mike. I guess as I've been looking at the reductions out of motor carrier, I presume that the agency helped LFO identify a reasonable place to do this fund shift. This won't be a diminution of motor carrier services, will it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, this will come out of motor carrier, and since we already received the revenue, it is going to be a reduction in terms of the overall amount of money the department has to spend. But because the initial intent of House Bill 3292 was to use highway fund, and because we felt like it was an appropriate use of highway fund, we're here to say that although we don't like having the reduction in the overall amount of money available to ODOT, we understand the logic of the move, and we'll make sure that this can work. The concern we have is, as I mentioned earlier, if our forecast is off, if we do the survey, and it's not as much to cover this, we may have to come back to the emergency board and say, good idea, but didn't work under the basis of the survey.
But as far as the diminution of services in this critical drug and alcohol testing program, this is purely a fund shift. There's no diminution of service.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, correct.
Okay. Yes, Senator Lee.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be helpful if the department can come back, give us a progress report, what is the methodology, and how is it coming out, whether it turns out to be adequate.
We don't have any returning reporting requirement within the 55, or within this particular bill, 3882. But probably within 5545, I think we've got two or three issues of report back within the actual transportation. Should we consider adding that as a report back?
At least for the first year, so we know what kind of methodology do they use, whether it's accurate.
Susie, would you like to report how that could most easily be accommodated within the existing 3882?
Amending this bill to put in an expenditure limitation, we will be issuing a budget report on this, and we can put it in this budget report.
A return on report, in effect.
That's right.
Okay, and Representative Johnson.
Chair, I would just ask that perhaps we put an adjective in like brief or summary or executive in nature so that the agency isn't spending a lot of time writing a report on a modest program by comparison to the agency's other work.
Certainly any major workup in that process, particularly if it involves the Department of Revenue for the actual dispersing of the funds and accounting for the funds and those kinds of things, would be basically taking it out of a very, very good cause, and that we don't want to decrease the amounts of the
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I suggest that we not make it any kind of a formal budget report, but a notation in the budget report itself that the agency find a mechanism for reporting, along with
So given the latitude to the agency.
We'll get back to the committee, Mr. Chair.
I think the committee can
mainly interested in the methodology.
And the methodology, right, the methodology, and
the accuracy of the survey.
And then the, also the implementation, the method of implementation, to keep the cost on that minimum, because if it could come against the individual income tax or an additional refund for those folks who are filing there, I would think that would be an additional safeguard, to make sure that we weren't giving multiple refunds. And that way corporations could qualify too, because small businesses could certainly qualify for the same refund. Any other discussion relative to the motion on the floor? The motion is to accept the legislative fiscal office recommendation number 2 and to amplify the method of returning and reporting. With that, if there's no other discussion, no objection, we'll order legislative fiscal office recommendation number 2 and to House Bill 383 and amend it accordingly. Robin? Susan.
That's okay. The last thing is to a motion to that the budget report reflects the legislature's intent that whenever possible, the department's reliance on general funds for other transportation programs, such as federal match requirements in transportation development, rail, or transit, be reduced and paid from the transportation operating fund. That's all, of course, dependent on what kind of money goes into that fund.
And Representative Johnson now makes a motion that we approve the additional recommendation from legislative fiscal office relative to the reliance on the general fund for other transportation programs, such as the federal match fund, department, whenever possible, rely on those other funds to be reduced and paid from the transportation operating fund. Discussion center, you
short rail money can come out of this.
Short rail for all the short rail ones.
All the short
very, very short rails.
Short rails.
Those little tiny jobbies on the mouse tracks, right? Okay. Further discussion relative to the motion before us. Any objections? If not, we will incorporate that recommendation then into the amended House Bill 3882. Other discussion? We will then, Representative Johnson then moves House Bill 382 as amended to the full to the first Ways and Means for the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Noting none, so ordered. And we will have Representative Johnson carry that to the full into the House. And Senator Yee, Senator Carnell,
would like to carry.
Senator Yee, would you like to carry that?
I carry the last one.
I'll do
carry
okay.
This one.
Senator Carnell will carry it to the Senate. Thank you very much. And we will then close the work session on House Bill 3882. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate your being here. And then at 2 o'clock, we have an informational presentation regarding Pacific Northwest Regional Economic Regional Compact.
Mr. Chair, for those of us that are new to this process, could you give us some guidance as to the role of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region Compact?
I just happened to have with me today.
By coincidence.
Handy dandy little information.
This information chart. The Panure.
Uh-huh.
Can you see that in public? Panure. Pacific Northwest Economic Region.
That's one you might want to be careful.
Don't step in that. is a statutorily created public-private partnership composed of 5 states, Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana, and the Canadian provinces of Alberta and British Columbia and the Yukon. It was created in 1991 by uniform legislation passed in each of the member jurisdictions. It has a gross domestic product of over $350 billion annually. The combined population of this particular region is 18 million persons. All state and provincial legislatures and regional are members of the PNUR. The governors, as are the governors and the premiers of the respective jurisdictions. In addition, private sector members, counties, economic development commissions, industrial associations, similar entities may join PNUR by paying dues on a sliding scale determined by their size. The general membership of PNUR meets twice a year. my recollection is that they have a meeting in June, yes. Let's see, there was one last June. My recollection is there's one in Whistler, Alberta, in June 29th.
British Columbia.
B.C.
B.C., okay. Whistler, B.C. For those of us who are not well-traveled, I beg your pardon.
North and west of Ontario, Mr. Chair.
North?
And west.
And west of Ontario. Okay. Depends upon which Ontario you're talking about.
Yeah, you're talking about.
There's only one in this room.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. British Columbia.
D.C. means in
the
D.C.
D.C. is British Columbia. And yes. Whistler is in British Columbia.
He's talking about B.C.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about D.C.
But they do meet twice a year, and the next meeting is the 29th and 30th of the 28th and 30th of June, as I recall, this next year.
I'm going there in August for vacation, so if you could get them to change the dates of the conference.
Let's see, my recollection.
And you can come back and report to the committee. Yeah, right.
All state and provincial legislators in the regions are members. So you're a member of it. You can swing up there and say, by golly, you guys should have had this meeting in August rather than...
He could actually do site investigation if he goes in August.
Site investigation after the meeting?
Yeah.
What more would you like to know about the Pacific Northwest Economic Region?
That covers it. She's putting it in the newer pile.
Newer.
Mr. Matt
Morrison
will be here.
That's the acronym of what he read.
Pacific Northwest Economic Region.
It sounds bad.
How did
they pronounce it?
They call it Penwar.
There we are. Yeah, Penwar.
But you really can't get there from the initials. There's no.
But it sounds better than where.
Yeah, Penwar.
Penwar. It sounds like it ought to be.
Be careful. Don't step in that Penwar.
Or as Representative Ringer said, in the pile.
Yes. And here's our 2 o'clock presentation now, I think.
That's right.
Welcome, gentlemen. Come forward, if you would, please. These are the... This must be Mr. Matt Morrison.
It's me.
Okay. Et al. And company. Welcome. It's great to have you here with us.
Yep. Like I'm Matt Black from Idaho. Representative from Idaho.
Representative from Idaho.
Thank you. Well, my name is Jeff Morris, representative from Washington State. Max is the current president of PNWAR, the Pacific Northwest Economic Region. I'm the vice president.
Yeah. Thank you.
We came to, I guess, just kind of give you a quick briefing about what PNWAR has been up to and what we're doing this coming year, and to also ask for as much participation from the Oregon legislature as we can muster on this trip down here. PNWAR was formed about 10 years ago, as you may or may not know. And it's the only statutory group in the United States and in Canada that exists to try to work out trade differences and economic development barriers within a region of the North American continent. We've had many successes in the last couple of years. The group's been somewhat revitalized in its mission statement. In particular, we've been focusing on areas of agricultural trade differences between some of the provinces and the states. I'll let Max talk about Idaho here in a little bit, but we had a cattle summit this past summer in Post Falls, Idaho, where there were some small provincial rules and regulations that were keeping cattle from going up into Alberta. And since we removed those, for example, Idaho's had a 60% increase in feedlot cattle shipment up to Alberta. It's a very significant increase. We're hoping to have a potato summit coming up this summer to hopefully head off a trade war among our potato growers between the provinces and the states. There's a East Coast battle going on with potatoes, and unfortunately the West Coast growers are getting sucked into it somewhat. We're trying to head that off. But what our purpose is to keep the states and the provinces talking to each other so that we don't put up barriers and, again, ease trade between our states and provinces so that as a region, which would be the 10th largest economy in the world, we can export our products to other world markets more easily and value add within the region. You've been handed out a brochure that looks at the first joint meeting between PENWAR and the Council of State Governments West. Up in British Columbia is going to be hosting the meeting this year. We rotate that meeting, the summer meeting, every year among the states. We're expecting about 500 to 600 participants, both from the private sector and from legislatures across the western states and provinces. There's a very healthy agenda, both on the CSG West side and on the PENWAR side. We cover everything from agricultural issues to trade and tourism. We're going to have the first energy panel, a very significant issue, obviously, to our area in our region. It's going to be the first discussion that's going to include British Columbia and Alberta. And the discussion is going to be twofold. One, should we have a regional energy strategy? And two, what would the process be for having, setting up, who would decide what that regional strategy is, basically? And as producer states, obviously we have a common interest together to not only keep cheap electricity within our region, but also to make sure that the wealth from being a producer state stays within our region as well. Well, there'll be a second part of that energy panel that will look at some of the new technologies coming along. But that's just an example of the type of thing that the PENWAR does to educate our Northwest members about some of these regional issues as well. We're governed, as you know, by a delegate council that has one member from each caucus in the legislature and one member appointed by the governor. The governments in British Columbia, Alberta, and the Yukon Territory appoint members from both the government and from the official opposition parties. So all people are at the table conversing. So no matter which way the winds swing on elections, there's always people that are somewhat informed and know what's going on among the states and provinces. Just a second about Oregon. We'd really like to get Oregon's participation up. One of the things we found is we all know that you have term limits here. We're making some adjustments in our bylaws because we'd like to see somebody back from the Oregon legislature in the leadership track for PENWAR. It used to be that it basically would take 6 years to become president of PENWAR, and with the new term limits, that would make it almost impossible for someone from the House from Oregon to be president of the organization. So we're going to single year terms for the presidency, so now someone can do it in three, and hopefully that will create some opportunities for people here to participate in the leadership of the group. So I'm going to stop with that.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you. You may have said this while I was just coming in. Who are our Oregon delegates now?
Well, they were just appointed, I believe, and I may ask Matt to actually come bail me out on that question up here, but I believe Representative Butler and Jensen, right, we just met with, and I'm not sure if the Democrats have made their
Representative Hansen
on the Democratic side. The Senate has not made their appointments yet. The governor has not officially made his appointment, although we've been talking with Secretary Bradbury about being the governor's representative to PENWAR. He was one of the original founding members of PENWAR back in 1991.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ringel is recognized.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if PENWAR is a good forum for discussing the Canadian timber subsidies and their impact on timber in Oregon.
We've been talking about that, the softwood subsidies, I think, in particular. You know, what we've tended to focus on, we're trying to actively engage on controversial issues. We've got into the salmon issue a little bit. We've dealt with the cattle issue, which was very controversial with Montana and Idaho and so forth with some of the provinces. What we found with the timber issues is that so much of that's federal, that as states and provinces, we can have a unified voice as having a position, but we can't actually affect change among our legislatures on the subsidy level. And so we're trying to figure out how to get our arms around that.
The Western States Forestry Task Force, which Oregon is part of, they're having a concurrent meeting with us this July. And so we don't know exactly how far into that issue they're going to get, but I think at this point, in my speaking with those people, and we had the Consul General of Canada in Boise 3 weeks ago talking with our forestry people, and I think the main thing that came out of that meeting is that even though, you know, it's good to sit down and talk about the issue on this level, but there's some things on the federal level that need to be done and currently are being done before we really can initiate a whole lot of change in that. But yes, the Western Forestry Task Force will be meeting concurrently, and Oregon is a member of that. And so I don't know exactly how far they might delve into that.
Representative Johnson, recognized.
Thank you. This appears to be a very ambitious program. This is my first introduction to it. How are you funded?
I can speak specifically of PennWare. The Council of State Governments West, I can't speak for them. But PennWare is basically funded by membership dues from the statutory membership of the states. The provinces in Washington I believe I pay $25,000 a year in membership dues. And Idaho just voluntarily increased theirs to 25 because they thought it was such a value belonging to the group. I think it was, what, 15,000 before. So some of the smaller Northwest states pay less. And I think Oregon is 25 as well, if I'm not mistaken. Which is why we're also encouraging the participation, because the softwood lumber issue is an excellent example. We can't guess what the important issues for Oregon are unless we have people participating there, advocating those, within the region. So it's membership due funded. We do get some grants, both from the federal government and some other grants from different state governments for different projects. Some of those might be like the Highway 97 corridor project from British Columbia down through Oregon. And some of the transportation departments have had separate grants to try to coordinate, some of the local jurisdictions along to get that corridor established would be a good example of that.
One of the other unique features of PennWare is the fact that we have a private sector co-chair on each of the working groups, and of course they pay dues as well, but that way the private sector people sit down in these working groups as co-chair, and that's the importance of the private sector, is that they feel that they have some real immediate access to legislators in the states and the MLAs from the British Columbia. And so those private sector people who deal with cross-border issues, they have legislators, government people right at the table while we're discussing them, and that's one of the things that's been very effective about PennWare. And the other thing, we often talk about regional issues, but the thing about PennWare is that we can take individual issues that a state may have a concern, and for instance, the Idaho cattlemen were having a real problem with getting their cattle shipped into Canada. They were experiencing a six-week quarantine before they could get it moved in. And it was through a PennWare meeting that the problem started to emerge. And so we're able to get on the phone and talk to the government people in Alberta, British Columbia, and we can have the players contacted very rapidly. And so as a result of that, we had the Idaho-Canada Ag Summit, and we had their key legislators and their ag minister down, and they, in just one or two-day session, it was really one-day session, but they resolved some things that made a big difference in our cattle people's And since then, they've had three other meetings. Now our Idaho cattle people are, even on their own, able to contact people, the industry people in Alberta, and they've had two follow-up meetings besides our PennWare meeting. So that's the other thing about, the PennWare, is the fact that we have the private sector people at the table and the public when we start talking about these issues.
One of the other values I found having the private sector involved is not only that they bring, obviously, their first-hand experience with what the real problems are with trade, but telecommunications is a good example. We all deal with some of the same companies in different states, and I found it very valuable myself to, hear directly from Oregon legislators or Idaho what, this company may be saying in their state versus what they're saying in our state on a regional basis. And I think with some of the larger groups that are more national-based, you don't tend to get that level of detail about what the company may be doing regionally, because most of the larger companies are set up, along regional lines for the most part. So that's a great value as well. The energy working group's a good example, too, of how the private partnership really works with Tenwar. Michael Phillips is going to co-chair that panel. He's the president of West Coast Pipeline. There isn't hardly any gas that gets to the states, natural gas that doesn't come through one of their pipelines eventually. And so they're a major, major player in the whole West Coast, specifically the Pacific Northwest energy market. And to have someone like that there, they say, look, this is not going to work. It's a pretty authoritative voice that it's not going to work or it is going to work.
Is transportation, or let's see, that would be in energy. Is energy one of the, you mentioned that earlier, Jeff, that maybe it was Max.
It is one of the working groups.
Right.
Working groups. I didn't see environmental and transportation, trade, and telecommunications. There is a recycling, and energy is one of the working groups.
Yeah, energy is a new one. We formed, we agreed at the winter meeting. A criticism of any current activities that were going on, but our feeling was is that to have regional energy discussions and not to include the provincial governments was a large mistake on our part. Again, because of the amount of their generating assets, the amount of power they're shipping south, the amount of their natural resources, they are producer states like the rest of the Northwest states, and together we can get further collaboratively probably than we can separately. So that was a new group we added. I'm going to refer you to this handout that was, I believe, distributed. But on pages 7 and 8 is the...
You can get one.
Well, you're doing this handout. May I ask you a question?
Please.
I didn't get an A in geography, so forgive this question. Three nations, one region.
Yeah, that's a... Well, that's a, again, we're having a joint meeting with the Council of State Governments West, and the Council of State Governments West has included some of the provinces from Mexico as membership in the group. And the focus of their last meeting was in San Diego, and it highlighted border relationships with Mexico.
So that's the title of your conference.
That's just the title.
Right.
Will be some Mexican representation
right
there, but probably not.
And somebody could break away by July. You never know. In the middle of this pamphlet, though, is a description starting on page 6 of the working groups and particularly agenda topics for the meeting in July. And again...
I had said that I thought the meeting was in June, and now you have the actual handout showing exactly when it is, and it still won't coincide.
I was trying as hard as I could.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
No, it's anyway, it's just a description of who the co-chairs are for those working panels. Again, if someone from the Oregon legislature would like to either co-chair a group or participate, we've gotten some good leads on some expertise here on a variety of different areas. We're going to try to plug folks in so that, again, some of the Oregon work can be highlighted in the region as far as energy, telecommunications, some of the ag issues as well.
We're now blessed with, at the dais, three members who are either members or alternate delegates to the PENWAR, and that is Representative Bob Jensen is here, and Representative Greg Smith is here, and because of your new term limit adjustment, I think it may be maybe doubly attractive to someone, particularly with the economic development background of Representative Greg Smith, that he might want to become much more actively involved, being the port district manager for one of the most successful ports in the states, Port of Marl. And this may be an invitation that needs to be extended and then work through leadership, Representative Smith, to make certain that your time is made available to get immersed, because now with the modifications, folks like Representative Jensen and myself, who may only be just around for a few more years, we may not be able to get to, other than the baptism by fire, just showing up and getting run through. So this may be an excellent opportunity, and certainly there are many, many issues which that you have subcommittee work groups on, tourism and telecommunications, and now with the addition of energy and agriculture those kinds of issues that need to be addressed, and we need to be brought up to some degree of expertise on that. Representative Jensen, we welcome you today. Any comments, you're welcome to participate with the dialogue.
Now, Oregon is a prime example of what most of the organizations are faced with term limits. You know, CSG, American Legislative Exchange, all of them are having specific discussions about what to do about term limits, because it's the same problem there. You know, you're in here for three sessions, 6 years, but three sessions. It takes a little bit of time to kind of get up to speed to what's going on with any of the organizations.
Yeah, it certainly would, and particularly for those of us who may live at distant reaches, and again, that's why I'm sensitive to folks like Representative Jensen or Representative Smith. You live near an airport. I live off in the hinterlands where it's still a ways to go to get to an airport. I have to go to Boise to get some local flights.
Mr. Chair, with respect, when we get Jordan Valley International built, that you'll no longer be able to test us. Good Idaho.
I will use it for every commercial flight out there.
I was flying back from Los Angeles the other day, and I sat down beside of a gentleman from where we started talking, and I asked him if he was going to Boise, and he said yes. But he was from Burns, and he flew into Boise, and he had a three-hour trip after he landed to get home.
He's cooking if he's doing the 3 hours.
That's right.
We'll get those speed limits raised when you're cooking.
Matt, did you have a comment?
I just wanted to mention that I think for this committee, one of the significant items on our agenda is looking at reauthorization.
Yeah, you're welcome to come up to the table, Matt.
Here's the chair if you would like to close.
Just the T21 being such a significant federal budget issue. It was a Penware meeting 5 years ago that laid the groundwork language for the International Trade Corridor Program, which is called Section 1118, 1119, and T21. The U.S. Federal Highway Administration has seen that as a very successful program, and they've asked us to look at designing language for the reauthorization that would address agricultural commodity deficiencies in the intermodal transportation system, so that there's an opportunity in the next 12 months to help craft federal legislation that would encourage multi-state applications on a competitive basis to deal with rail, ports, and road shipping deficiencies for agricultural commodities. And that is one area that's on the Transportation 2 working group session. And we'll describe how Washington State appropriated money for the Apple cars that are going on Amtrak trains. And Washington State also bought grain cars because grain was rotting in eastern Washington and BNSF wouldn't allow the cars to be used to pick up the grain on such a short haul. But those are examples of creative solutions to problems, and I think that T21 reauthorization may offer some support to the agricultural commodity areas in addressing those deficiencies.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a call to action for this committee? Would a letter of support, or are you looking for us to do something specific in advancing the issue that you're discussing?
We'd love to have a point person from Oregon on that working group to address that specific issue. Yeah.
And that would be one of the delegates that has already been selected?
Hopefully.
But or it could be.
Could
it
be.
Too.
Right. The delegates are the official voting members of Penware. I mean, if we want to change the bylaws or, you know, do something of a corporate nature, they have the right to vote. But anyone from any of the legislatures can participate in the working groups. More often than not, maybe some leadership might decide this person would be the point person on a project like this because they might have a particular area of expertise there or transportation. But we take all comers.
Representative Johnson, would you and Representative Smith like to take that issue up and become an ad hoc subcommittee, official subcommittee, unofficial subcommittee too?
I might even be able to make this easier for you, Mr. Chair. My thought was, given that I've had the privilege of serving for 8 years as a port commissioner, and I understand the work that ports do, given the unique set of circumstances that correspond to Representative Smith's service, this might be an ideal opportunity to second your, or validate your encouragement that he seeks some kind of a leadership role in looking at one of these transportation areas. Ports, given their statutory nature in this state, have unique and sweeping powers that cut across all sorts of transportation modes. It is particularly useful that the congressional representative from Representative Smith's district is acutely interested in these issues, as is one of our senators. And so it might be that the constellations have lined up to make Representative Smith's contribution uniquely useful on behalf of the state.
Representative Smith, I hear the subcommittee, the ad hoc subcommittee of two going to an ad hoc subcommittee of one. If you will work with folks from Fenmore relative to transportation and motor transportation issues related to the ports and the balance of the state of Oregon's needs, it would, I think, be very appropriate.
If I can be of assistance in any way, I'm happy to, but I think you're uniquely situated to take the lead in this.
And any letters of recommendation, other kinds of comments that wouldn't necessarily, I'm sure that Representative Johnson would assist there. So with that, I would appreciate you following up on that, because I think, again, it's like Representative Johnson said, I think the constellations and stars have lined up to assist us in this regard at this point.
Senator
Carnell.
You mentioned that there were House members, but no one yet appointed by leadership in the Senate. What is the timeline on that?
We're hoping to get it even today as we meet with Senator Durfler this afternoon.
Representative Johnson,
I think in looking at the program, as comprehensive as it was, I didn't see anything that spoke to the swine industry, and it might be particularly useful to have someone with expertise in that particular area. we're Senate leadership to look to agricultural production of domestic animals. That might be particularly useful.
Also have sheep.
She still has that brown cows, too.
Yeah.
And Ray will attest to that. Bring the saddle in and everything.
That's right.
Perhaps, Senator Connelly, you could visit with the Senate President and make sure that if those appointments are going to be made, that, again, you find yourself in a very unique position coming from your prior background as a speaker and coming from your background within Central Oregon and county government as well. That could be very, very beneficial to the state of Oregon and our relationship because of those economic regions. So. And Representatives Jensen and I will cheer you folks on. You're doing a great job, but we may even come back and have you whistle or something from Whistler, D.C. that you picked out. Are there further questions of these good representatives from the city with us? Economic region?
Thank you for taking your time.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. With that, we will go ahead and close the discussion of our